The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everyone, and welcome today to Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. So excited to have Marie Cook with us today. Marie is the founder and the president of Nathaniel's Hope, and we're going to learn all about that. She has written a book, she and her husband, Tim, and it's all about, this is the subtitle, Little Life, Big Purpose, Seeing a New View from a Child with Special Needs. And the name of the book is Hope Lives. And it's a happy looking book. And I've got a happy guest with us here today. Marie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. So happy to be here today.
Well, it is so nice to have you. I've met your husband in the past. Your husband owns the beautiful company that makes these gorgeous boats called Regal Boats. And I've known of the Cooks for many years. So they've been around Orlando for, I don't know how long, but a long time.
Yeah, the company's actually a family business. Has been in existence for 50 years.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been around longer.
It's a long time.
Longer than Tim's leadership, for sure. But you and your husband are very involved, not only obviously in that business, but in the community. And that's what we're really talking about with you. It's really always a joy to get to talk to a founder, to talk to someone who has begun a work like what Nathaniel's Hope is, and just to hear your side of the story and realize that there are people all over. And that, I'm sure, is what you found out. It's not just an uncommon thing to find a child or to find a family with a child that has special needs.
Yeah, there's a statistic that says 1 out of 10 kids under the age of 14 has some type of disability. And sometimes when we think about disability, we think somebody with a severe disability, but somebody could have a mild, moderate, or severe disability, but it impacts more people than you realize.
It really does. And Nathaniel's Hope. So to get things started, let's talk about you for just a second. Where did you grow up? How did you come to know the Lord?
Yeah, well, I'm a girl from Chicago. I'm a city girl. And actually, I grew up Ukrainian Orthodox. So when I grew up, my concept of God was very far away. It was me trying to reach up to find God. But when I was 16 years old, my brother had given his life to the Lord, and he came home at Thanksgiving time and with the Bible and the whole story, and laid out the story of salvation. And my mom and I accepted Christ into our lives. And that was about 40 years ago. And our life completely changed from that point on.
Now, led by your brother.
My brother, yes.
Oh, that is so cool. And he got to lead his mom.
Yes.
That is really a cool story.
Yeah. So we've been growing, one day at a time since then.
Now, I've spent some time in Chicago in the past. There's no comparison, though, in my mind, to Chicago and where you are right now, Orlando.
There is, especially in the winter months.
That's right. The Windy City, they don't call it that for nothing. And when you're up there in the wintertime, it can be cold and freezing wind. Oh, my goodness. That's what it's like. You're here today again talking about this subject of Nathaniel's Hope. What's the origin of all that?
Well, the origin is our little son named Nathaniel, who God brought into our lives about 23 years ago. And when he was born with multiple special needs, fighting for his life right here in Arnold Palmer Hospital in Orlando, and spent pretty much the first 3 months of his life in the neonatal intensive care unit and just taken care of by wonderful people that they do amazing things at Arnold Palmer Hospital. Mm-hmm,
they really do.
Yes. And so he was born with an undiagnosed syndrome. When he came home finally, he struggled with life. His little nursery became like a hospital room, and we cared for him. He had major surgeries in his life. He had an undiagnosed syndrome, so we didn't really know the cause of it, but his care was very, very complex and very involved. And we were kind of thrown into a community, to be honest, we didn't want to be a part of. We didn't want to enter the special needs community, but there we found ourselves. And at the time, we had two girls, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And so we were trying to do life as a family with a son that was severely disabled, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to just make it happen.
Yeah, it's not convenient.
Yes.
And it's never easy.
Right.
But you guys were, now you're facing it, you're embracing it, and you move on. And these surgeries, and also, was there a time ever down the road that they came up with a diagnosis for what it was or what caused it?
No, he just had a lot of unique symptoms, you know, and we tried to go different states even and get the specialists to try and determine what it was. But he was just, you know, his own kid, and every day was a new day. And mm-hmm. One story, though, one of the conditions he had was something called craniosynostosis, where your skull kind of fuses together prematurely mm-hmm. to not allow your brain to grow, or your brain isn't growing fast enough. And we had had a couple surgeries here in Orlando, and it wasn't doing the trick. So we ended up going to Dallas. And when in Dallas, he had a very successful surgery with a team of doctors. And when we were there, of course, after he had the surgery, he caught a bacterial pneumonia. We couldn't get out of ICU, and it was very hard being away from home. But when we finally got out of ICU, we had a nurse tending to our son. And as we're unpacking, like, we're just depleted, like spiritually, physically, emotionally, we have mm-hmm. nothing left. And this nurse is weeping, and she goes, "There's something about this boy." And, you know, as we began talking, we realized we were all Christians, and she goes, "Can I pray for you?" And of course, we're praying, you know, we're like, "Yes, we can use prayer. We want God to heal him. We want to go home," you know,
yeah, sure.
and everything. And what she prayed was an odd prayer, but we never forgot it. But she prayed that his purpose would be fulfilled. And it was, we journaled that mm-hmm. and we thought, what did that mean, you know? And then after he had a change of address at 4.5, and moved to heaven. And when that happened, it came to our mind, both my husband and I, we knew that God said, "This isn't the end, it's the beginning. I want you to steward the journey you've been on mm-hmm. for these last 4.5 years and now apply it to life, you know, mm-hmm. and make a difference."
Oh, that is a touching story. And I'm so affected. My wife and I lost a child as well, but for a much shorter amount of time. We only had him for 9 hours. Mm. So 4.5 years, I just can't imagine the pain that brought you, and the entire, just the grieving process. I think any parent that's ever lost a child right now is going, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. Even though situations are different, it's very hard.
Right. Well, you know, there's also a grieving process, too, I think, when maybe the diagnosis is made that you have a child with a disability sometimes, because your dreams, you know, it's not what you plan for in life, and you got to begin to kind of readjust. So there's a lot of along the way of the journey, the whole world of special needs, of just surrendering and kind of embracing the new journey that you are on mm-hmm. as a family.
You know, this is really now not so much even for you and for Tim, but you're doing this as a ministry now through Nathaniel's Hope, and this is going on and living on.
It is. You know, when we had Nathaniel, you know, my husband, he has this great analogy that we had these five F's. We had our faith, which was foundational. I don't know if I'd be sitting here today if I didn't have my faith. Mm-hmm. We had a family that was supportive. We had friends. We had finances, meaning that we weren't going to worry about losing our house. And we have flexibility. You know, he could take time off of work, and we were barely making it. And we say, what do families do that only have two F's or one F, you know, how do they make it in life? And so as a result of that, you know, we felt like God called us to start a ministry to kind of cheer on these families that maybe have one F, two Fs, three mm-hmm. Fs, to pull alongside. So we started Nathaniel's Hope, and our mission is to celebrate kids with special needs, who we call our VIPs, because I hate the term disabled and handicapped, because they're kids first, mm-hmm. but to celebrate VIP kids of all ages, as well as educate and equip the community, particularly churches, to kind of to make a difference, you know, to bring programs and assistance to this community and to enrich the lives of families impacted by disability.
Now, I'm betting that when you began Nathaniel's Hope, there weren't a lot of ministries like what you were doing, right?
Yeah, it's a very hard community. It's very hard. You know, if you were doing this for money, you would see it would be like a wide open, like, wow, we need to hit this market because there's such a need. But it's so hard at times, you know, to we're trying to advocate for those who don't have a voice, mm-hmm. you know, and when you are in the space of having a child with a disability and you're having to fight everybody for everything, for every right for your child, you know, it gets very, really tiring, you know, and we have joined with others. I mean, there's some ministries out there, and everybody we're trying to pull together to cheer on these families and help them to hold their arms up, you know. but it's a very difficult space, you know, to to embrace sometimes.
You know, when you think back to your 4.5 years that you had with Nathaniel, I know there had to be some people that just were like angels to you guys when you were in the middle of all of that. When you look back at that time, what are some of the memorable faces or not so much their names, but what happened with events during that 4.5 years that you remember?
You know, I think about the fact that when you have a child with a disability, your life, you enter a world of isolation sometimes. You know, suddenly your path stops. Everybody around you keeps going, you know, and even your child's milestones continue on. And when you have a child with a disability, that's not the case. Like, you're going to go at your own pace. And oftentimes you can't enter into life, you know, whether that's everyday life, whether that's church life, because you're on your own path like that. Mm-hmm. So it could be very lonely and very isolating. But I remember people that were very practical and just kind of entered our world and just showed up. It made a difference. I think about when I had to carry oxygen tanks to take my son to the doctor, how a lady from church would just come and say, I'm going to go with you to your appointment to help you to manage all of your stuff that you have to bring. Or I remember there was a man from our church that would come outside on a weekly basis and just sit outside the nursery and just pray, do nothing but pray,
intercede,
you know, or our pastor who would show up on our driveway when we're headed to have a surgery, just to be there for us, or just practical things of when our girls couldn't go to church, if somebody called up and said, hey, can I take your girls to church? You know, can I do something, or just engage in our life, you know, whether, you know, bringing a meal over, you know, maybe nobody could take care of our son who is so involved. He's on IVs and oxygen and monitors and things like that. His little nursery was like a hospital room. So that could be very intimidating, but to remember that the caregiver can use the ministry as well. Like, maybe you can't take care of the special needs child, but the caregiver and the family, the siblings, you know, they need that support as well. So I think just the practical things that people did for us made such a difference in our lives.
It's not just the parents either that are deeply impacted and affected by a situation like what you had. You already had two children yourself already. How was it on them?
You know, it's very difficult. I mean, their life suddenly changed. I mean, every decision that we made as a family depended on what was best for Nathaniel. You know, if we could go out to dinner, it's like we'd have to go at 3 p.m. when nobody was in a restaurant, you know, and it would be like, okay, can we take him, you know? And but the whole family learns how to work together. I remember my 5-year-old, you know, giving our son breathing treatments while he's sitting in a chair and I'm trying to do something else to prepare. She's standing there giving him breathing treatments while my 3-year-old is jumping up and down from trying to entertain him, you know. Wow. But it's like, you know, everybody just, it just changes. But then I think the normal life, you know, talking to my girls now, rolling the tape forward, they look back and, you know, in some cases, they had to miss out on things that typical kids might get to do just because everybody, it's a family affair. It affects the whole family, you know, that we're together on this journey. And as a result of our son, his life and his homegoing, our oldest daughter became a mental health counselor for kids and teenagers. And now she works with kids that have been impacted by trauma because of her journey, you know, with her brother and just kind of going through that journey. She saw the need to just reach out and be there for kids, you know. And so it really impacts siblings, you know, but I say, you know, all things work together for good, and God doesn't use these hard circumstances to punish kids or to, you know, they're not going to suffer for it. But I think my girls have such incredible hearts and they have such an incredible desire to serve, and they see life and the world differently because of their journey with their brother, you know. And so, it, you know, God uses that to impact us in incredible ways.
Amazingly ways, apparently, from what I'm seeing, and the impact on your daughter already going into that. So it had a spillover effect, and not only in your heart and in your husband's heart, but in your children too. You know, I think the difference in the way a person like yourself, who's a believer, can respond to a difficult situation like a special needs child, especially as dramatic of a special need as what you went through, one that is for a temporal time, only 4.5 years that you had. But that is so hard to do all of that for 4.5 years. It makes me wonder, what do people do that don't have a relationship with the Lord? I wonder how they can handle it. But I'm sure you talk to people on a regular basis that may not know the Lord while they're dealing with their special need child.
Right. Without hope, you know, if we didn't have the anchor of hope, I mean, number one, it's so reassuring to know that we know that we're going to be reunited with our son. We know that we're just passing through in this life. This is not the real life. We are just passing through. And you realize that it's not about me. You know, this life is not about me, but it's what God wants to do. But one of the things we're really trying to do is to bring hope to families. So I would say, like, to be Jesus with skin on to families, you know, and that's what we all can do, you know, because when you're on that journey, and some of these families have a very difficult journey. There's a high percentage of single parents in this space, you know, because it's just the journey's so hard that it's hard for married couples to stay together. There's financial strains. There's all the added responsibilities, especially through this pandemic. It's been very, very hard for families, what they've had to do. But I know that there's hope. There's always hope, and hope lives, you know, and without hope, you know, I don't know how any of us can make it. So we want to share that hope with as many people as we can.
Yeah, I know you found the Lord. You said all those years ago when your brother shared, and, you know, this thing about hope has been obviously, it's been preached on since the Bible, since Jesus. He is the living hope. But I think of one expression or one definition of hope that I heard a number of years ago, and it was from your church, Calvary Assembly, when Pastor Roy Harthorn would say, hope is the constant expectation of good. He was the first person that I ever heard use that particular expression just like that. And when you're dealing with something like what you and Tim were dealing with, you have to have that hope guiding you, fueling you, because there are days you wake up and it just feels like you can't make it another day, right?
Right. It is. And I think for any of us, I mean, our journey is with our son, you know, and having a child with a disability and then losing, or not losing, we know where he's at, but, you know, having to say goodbye to him, you know, and prior to that, part of my testimony is I had a husband that went to heaven at age 24. And so, you know, all of us have something. Life is not fair. We always say life is not fair, but God is faithful, you know, and if you just reach out and just open up your hands and open up your heart to him, you know, he'll meet those needs and he'll see us through. He's not a respecter person. He has loved me better than anybody else, you know, but I can truly say and testify of his faithfulness.
How would you answer people who would look at you and say, you've gone through such a loss in your life already at this point in your life, and yet you seem so joyful, you seem so hopeful? How do you answer them when they say, how are you this way?
I think, again, it's my faith. Without Christ being in my life and having him as an anchor in my life, I wouldn't be sitting here today. That doesn't mean that life has been easy, but I know who my source is. I know who my source of strength is, who my source of help is, you know, and God has been so faithful to be there. But all of us face things in life, and we have to decide whether we're going to embrace it with Christ, or we either grow bitter or better, honestly. Mm-hmm. We either, you know, grow bitter and hard, or we grow better because we open ourselves up to what maybe God has for us.
I like that. We'll open up the next segment with that thought, but that's a very good thought. And my guest today is Marie Cook, and she is the leader of an organization called Nathaniel's Hope, and an author of a book by the name Hope Lives. And we'll be back with her in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
What a privilege it is to have my guest in the studio today, Marie Cook. She and her husband are the co-founders of Nathaniel's Hope. And, you know, this is a nonprofit, obviously, that was really born out of a very difficult time in your own life, very deep running grief and pain. And yet God, out of that kind of that sense of ashes, has brought something very beautiful. So out of something that ended in death, there's been something of life that's come, and that's just like God, isn't it?
It is. You know, so often we like to take what we think are our best gifts and say, we can do this and we can do that. But God does work through our pain and our brokenness to do some of the greatest work.
Yeah. And you deal with people when they are at, again, one of the most difficult junctions in their life, when they are facing an uncertain future and they are not prepared for it any more than you were prepared for it, or anyone that has an unexpected bit of news like a car wreck. Nobody's ever prepared for these things. Yet God has promised us in the Word that we're going to go through many types of trials and suffering. And that's all part of what it takes, I believe, for us to mature and to become the people. He uses difficult times to really shape His people.
He does. You wish it could go a different way.
Yeah.
But He does. And I'm thankful that He's always with us. I mean, no matter what you face, even when you don't feel Him, you know, in those difficult times, He's always with us, because His Word, you know, doesn't lie, and there's truth in His Word.
Mm-hmm. So you've shared that your journey, God really laid it on yours and Tim's heart, that your journey wasn't just to be only about that 4.5 year period. It wasn't like you went through a very difficult period and you said, okay, that's done, now let's move on. But instead, God says you've been brought on this journey for a purpose.
Right.
So in that moment, if you look back, what did you see as the kind of like where you thought this was going to go back then?
Well, after He had a change of address and moved to heaven, you know, of course, we were very broken, but we knew that we'd been brought into a community that needed a lot of help and support. So we started with a little handful of people that we just said, hey, would you just kind of be on this journey with us? And let's talk through and pray through and think through how we can be used. And we saw that the number one need that families had really was to get a break, you know, because we were absolutely exhausted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lived in a constant state of exhaustion for 4.5 years. And my story is just my story. There's thousands of families out there that have their unique stories. And so we began thinking about how can we give families a break? But we knew that we had to kind of organize, and how do we organize? And so we began Nathaniel's Hope, you know, mm-hmm. and our idea was just to pull along families. We knew that whatever we did, we wanted to practically help families, but we knew we wanted to bring them hope, because we knew without hope, we would have never made it, you know, so we wanted to share that. So as we began, we kind of have 4 core programs, but the first one that we started was something called Buddy Break. And that was where we partnered with local churches. Actually, we started at Calvary Assembly, our first church. I had been on staff there for many years, and they were very open to allow us to start. And we had we just started and said, okay, we're going to take care of special needs kids so families can get a break for 3 hours. And we didn't really know what we were doing. We were starting, mm-hmm. but we had the heart and we had the tools to start. And out of that, this program has now grown that we partner with churches in 37 states. And actually, we just trained a church in Alaska and Hawaii. And we have a church partner in Bristol, England, that hopefully will start when COVID can kind of roll over, and in Singapore, in South Africa. But we're trying to equip churches to do what the church wants to do. Sometimes we see the need and we don't know what to do. And we just feel like if we can just give the tool to the church, we can practically help them to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And so by doing that, by helping churches give families a break, we're doing 4 things. I mean, obviously, we're giving kids a place to belong, because sometimes it's hard for these kids to have a place to belong. They don't always get invited to the birthday parties. They're not included in things. So we're giving them a space to belong in. We're giving parents a break. You know, I can't tell you time and time again the stories we hear of moms going in a church parking lot and going to sleep for 3 hours to get a break, because they're single parents. They can't sleep at night. They got to always sleep with one eye open, or, you know, they just don't get the rest they need. We're actually, it's a great outreach to the community. It's a place for the community, the church, to say, hey, we care and we want to help you. So they open up their arms. But I think also a great thing is that it trains volunteers. It gets people equipped, because sometimes you say, man, I want to reach out to this community, but I don't have people that are special ed teachers or people that know how to work with these kids. Well, we take everybody from top level executives to senior citizens to high school students, and we can teach them how to love a child and how to play with a child for 3 hours and interact with them and build a relationship with them and then the family, which makes such a difference. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that.
What kind of training do you give people to be part of something like that?
Yeah, great question. Well, we have like 6 hours on demand training for the leaders of the program that we give them all the tools, and it's kind of a turnkey ministry. Like, here's how you structure this and what you do. And then we give them media training to train their volunteers, like a 2-hour training to train their volunteers, very high level. I mean, I feel like people are afraid of what they don't know. I mean, we can't train them how to work with every disability, but if you can train the heart in a way to say, I'm willing to learn, and because everything, every child is so different. The way you work with one child isn't how you're going to work with another child. But if you're willing to learn and focus on that child, then you'll be able to kind of build that relationship and work with them in that time and build a friendship with them.
Now, knowing that there's a big, like a big range of types and needs that children have that are in this kind of category, what would be some of those that you've seen in this ministry so far?
Yeah, I think one, you know, as before I said, they can have a mild, moderate, or severe disability. We say that kids with special needs are our VIPs, and that may include a kid with a physical disability, cognitive, a life-threatening illness, those that have hidden disabilities, that they look typical on the outside, you know, or kids that might have life-threatening illnesses, kids that just run the gamut like that. But we see a lot of kids with autism. But I think kids with autism now, it's when we first started Nathaniel's Hope, I think it was like 1 in 200 kids were diagnosed with autism. And now I think I heard the latest statistic for boys is like 1 in 47.
Wow.
It's a very high number. And of course, there's a spectrum. So some can be very high functioning and some might be lower functioning, but it's a spectrum. So when you even work with a child with autism, you can't say, well, because they have autism, this is what they act like, you know? And so anyway, so it's a great opportunity. So it's really about God made us all so uniquely. So it's like we just got to look at the person that God has made and get to know them and figure out how the best way to connect with them and work with them.
That is an amazing statistic. 1 in 47.
Right.
And that's higher than what I've heard.
Yeah,
so that is
high.
Something.
And so, and as I mentioned, churches, you know, only 10% of families affected by disability attend church. Think about that. I'm talking about kids and adults. That's a nationwide national figure. Only 10% of people impacted by disability attend church. So if we can help equip the church and educate the church and help them to do something, when you hear that statistic, it's like, oh my goodness, we should be doing something. Like, we should be very intentional to be reaching this community or getting equipped. So we're trying to put the tools in the hands of the church to get comfortable to reach this community, you know?
That's a very good thing that you're doing for parents who are there. You mentioned this already, the tendency for isolation and the feel that they're not only isolated from what they wanted to do, but they're isolated from the very people often that they love, their family. I mean, they literally don't even have time. If you're talking about people dropping their child off for a 3-hour buddy break, and they go out and get a nap for 3 hours.
Right.
That shows you just how severe this need is.
Right. It could be a nap, or it could be that a husband and wife may have a date time together. It could be that, you know, they're going to try and get some practical work done that they can't get done, you know. I mean, whatever it is, but you know, it's just hard to get the time. And I think sometimes too, I think people are afraid of disability. So even families who may love their family that has somebody impacted by disability, we're afraid of what we don't know, right? And so sometimes we step away from it. We don't know how to come in and how to interact, you know? So I guess I just want to speak to that and say, you know, if you have a family member, extended family member, a neighbor, a coworker, somebody that has a disability or a child with a disability, I just want to encourage you just to enter in, you know, just enter their lives and don't wait for that invitation, because most of the time these families are so busy trying to do life
that they cope.
That they can't reach out, you know. So I just encourage you to be proactive, to reach into their lives and to do something to make a difference.
Now, I mentioned you've written a book. Tell us about that process, because it's a gorgeous book. I mean, it's well put together.
Yes. So Hope Lives was a combined effort between my husband and I. And actually, when Nathaniel first, left us, we both handle grief differently. And for Tim, it was to write. So he tried to journal as much as he could, you know, about Nathaniel's journey. And so the book is written from Nathaniel's perspective, from a child's perspective of what it's like being a kid with a disability and kind of entering the world. So the book is from womb to heaven, his perspective from womb to heaven. And then there's lots of pointers or little tidbits on how people that aren't impacted by disability can pull alongside a family and walk that journey with them. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a combined effort like that. It's an easy read, lots of pictures in it.
Great color.
Great color.
A great cover. I mean, all the things that you hope a book will have, that's what this looks like.
Yeah.
And it would look just like a happy book for children. But yet behind that is this obvious, very, I guess you could almost say mature need that a mom and dad who are facing some of the biggest days in their lives, that's a little different side of it, but you've really got a wonderful tool that I believe just the book itself will kind of give them a happy thought and a lot of hope.
Oh, that's our hope. And along with the book, too, we have a birthday club. So if anybody's listening, they have a child with special needs. We have a VIP membership club that we have over 16,000 kids in, and they get birthday cards on their birthday. They get a bear when they first join, and they get invited to free events that we host. Every year, typically we do a big event. We had to do a pivot this year called Make Them Smile Like Yola. We'll have about 35,000 people at the mm-hmm. event, over 3,000 VIP kids with disabilities. It's a time that the Orlando community comes together to celebrate this community. But this year, because we couldn't do it, and last year we did a pivot, and we're doing a Make Them Smile Fari at Wild Florida. And so we're going to be sending 1,500 special needs families through the park for free. Everything we do for families is free because we know these families have to, they're pulled in every direction. Their pocketbook is pulled on the care that their kids need. And so we just try and bless them and kind of give them that cup of cold water and invite others to join in with us. So we're doing this event at Wild Florida next week, and we'll have characters out there. We have such amazing sponsors just blessing and loving on these kids and doing things to support this community.
And now you've already touched on what my next question was going to be. Do you get a lot of community support from businesses and things like that? But it sounds like you do.
We do. Like my husband says, you know how the world runs on Duncan. We run on volunteers. And so we have a small staff, a small team, but we have a huge volunteer corps. And actually, I'm a volunteer as well. So I'm part of that team. And we literally we'll have hundreds of volunteers that'll man this event we're doing next week. When we do our Make Them Smile event, we'll have 450 volunteers show up at 5:15 in the morning at Lake Yola to serve in the hot sun an entire day to love these families and to serve them. Yeah, our buddy breaks across the country, it's all volunteer driven. We have thousands of people saying, okay, I might be nervous about this, I'm scared, but count me in. I want to learn how to love a child and be a part of that. At Christmas time, we do a toy shop locally here in Orlando called Nathaniel's Toy Shop. And we'll have companies secure toy. I think we had about 100 companies doing toy drives at their place of work, and Walgreens had about 300 stores collecting toys for us. And then we set up a toy shop and we let the families come pick out the toys. We wrap them, the gifts, we feed the families, we watch their kids. And this year we did a lot of home deliveries, but that takes the community to kind of come in and support us and to be a part of that. So all of our different programs like that, we're trying to just empower others to pull alongside. If we just did it ourselves, we'd have addition, but we're looking for multiplication because we know the need is so great. And we know that when people come to give to this community, they're going to walk away so much more blessed than mm-hmm. what they were able to give mm-hmm. these families and these kids and families.
Are you seeing an increase? We've already talked about the increase in autism. Are you seeing an increase in this society and this culture with the emphasis on health? And you would think that things like that might be better, but I'm betting that there's been an increase in it, right?
Yeah, I think there's an increase in awareness. I think media is bringing an awareness to disability out there. I think the needs are out there. I think people used to hide their kids or loved ones that had disability, but now it's becoming more acceptable to involve them. Inclusion is the big buzzword, mm-hmm. to have inclusion in every aspect, whether it's the church, whether it's schools, whether it's places of employment. And so I think there's a greater just awareness of this community. And I think people are recognizing just because a person has a disability doesn't mean that they don't have value or purpose. You know, mm-hmm. we call people with disabilities VIPs because we believe God's created them with incredible value and incredible purpose. And I think a lot of times it's easy. We pass judgments when we see somebody and we may write them off because they have a physical disability, then they automatically think they have a cognitive disability. And we begin to think about the things people can't do instead of think of all the gifts God has given them, the things that they can do and contribute to our life. Our little boy who never walked or talked or ate with his mouth taught us about the character of God that our fully able daughters couldn't teach us, about unconditional love. It's what he drew out of us, you know, and he was our teacher, you know, in the 4.5 years we were in a classroom with him. But these kids can, they can add value. And so in the body, within the body of Christ, we all have our part that we play.
Yes.
And so,
and they do too. Yes. And I think it's great that you're seeing that value and you're helping the parents who are struggling with just the everyday life.
Yes.
And that's what happens when you have a special needs child. My guest today is Marie Cook. We'll be back with one more segment with her. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're listening to The Shepherd.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
In the studio today with Marie Cook, she and her husband Tim are the founders of an organization called Nathaniel's Hope. And as you've been listening, if you've heard the previous segments, this all was born into their lives when their baby Nathaniel was born with special needs. And from his life, he lived for 4.5 years. And I like the way you said he exchanged address. He got a new address. And I might say he's living in a much better place than we are right now. And I love that scriptural thought that says we will go to him.
Yes.
And that's really true. And that's the hope that we have. And what a great word to include in the name of this nonprofit is hope, because that's really what they need. That's what the parents need. And I think that's really something that the community gets, whatever community it is, whether it's a governmental, a city, a town, that can rally behind a family in their city. They are the great benefactors at the end of the day, because we all grow when something that was very, let's just say, very fragile is helped along, and it changes everyone's heart.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I just thank you for what you're doing. And, you know, when we look back at this year, this has been a weird year. And 2020 was not what I thought it would be, and wasn't what you thought it would be, I'm sure. How did it affect your organization?
You know, I think for families impacted by disability, it has been an incredibly hard year. Take it a community that already has a hard life. It made it even harder when kids had to be home from school and families suddenly had to become the teachers, moms and dads and caregivers had to become the teachers, was very hard when they lost all their special services and support services in the school. When kids had to go through therapy and could no longer do therapy and they're trying to do it, you know, through the computer, that was very hard to do. Kids that need routine, a lot of kids with disabilities need routine. And when routine was ripped out of their life, you know, we've heard time and time again how they have transgressed back. They've reversed some of their skill levels. They've gone back, their social skills and things like that. I think parents who've had to do double duty, it's been hard. Parents maybe who've lost jobs or had to leave their jobs because of the fact that they had to care for their child has put financial hardships on this community. I think the isolation, and even when we were all rushing around trying to find our toilet paper and hand sanitizer and things like that, you know, very hard to take a child running around that has a physical disability trying to run in and out of stores to try and find the things that you need to even practically sustain the everyday needs that you have. It's just impacted in every way, you know, and then of course the isolation that we all felt. I like to say though that we have felt isolation, and I know we're coming out of isolation now, but in a lot of cases families impacted by disability live in a pandemic site most of their life with their kids.
You get to talk to a lot of them and you see it happen on all these different levels with different types of disabilities and problems. What do you think that these families that are going through this, they're in the throes of it right now, what do you think they would love for others who are not dealing with this to know about where they are right now?
Right. That's a great question. You know, I think that they feel very much alone and very isolated. And I think that any attempts to reach into their life and to walk the journey with them is very well accepted. During the pandemic, we tried to encourage our church partners to be proactive, to reach into their lives, whether it was, I mean, these may sound like silly things, but whether it was one leader would FaceTime with a child so mom could take a shower, something practical like that, like understanding that this mom could never break away from watching her child. You know, we had people doing dinner breaks, you know, trying to bring dinner to the door so that these families could just get a break. Like they maybe couldn't do anything else, but just provide dinner for them. We produce a series of children's programs called Virtual Buddy Break that we got participation from around the country. People just tape these stories and crafts and songs on their phones. Our programs around the country, we kind of stitched them all together, and we created Virtual Buddy Break, hoping to grab the kids' attention, you know, for 40 minutes so mom mm-hmm. or dad could get a break and keep that consistency going, because this was part of their life, you know. But I think these families, you know, just they want to be like everybody else, and they want their child to be treated like everybody else. And oftentimes that's hard, and our society doesn't always welcome that. Mm-hmm. And so I think anything we can do to bring life normalcy to them and just practically hold up their arms, you know, this last week our Buddy Break program, or a couple of weeks ago during Mother's Day at Discovery Church, you know, the moms or the leadership of the church, they did an incredible tea for the moms to help them feel loved. And all the men at the church washed the cars and they gassed up the cars for the mom, just practically helping them. It wasn't anything big to do, but it was just kind of saying, hey, in your life, in your daily journey of life, we want to help you. We want to hold up your arms somehow to support you. You know, we're working on developing a new program called Nathaniel's Neighbor, and we want to roll out a program to empower people to do neighborly things for people impacted by disability, like just pull alongside them. If you're going to the grocery store, you can pick up a gallon of milk for mom who maybe can't run out and do mm-hmm. that, or maybe you can show up and you can mow some grass for them, or you can go over to the house and read a book to a child so, you know, a caregiver can just get half an hour of peace, you know, during that time. But the lives are so hard for these families. And in many cases, when children grow up to be adults, some of these families still have adults that are like kids and will until, you know, in many cases, their kids are going to outlive them, mm-hmm. you know, and those are all issues to be faced as well. So it's a hard journey, you know, for these families.
And it's been hard because of COVID. Are you encouraged in the organization as you look forward and what looks like a lot of release of some of the restrictions that have been brought about because of COVID?
It's been incredible. You know, we just had an event a few weeks ago with Fun Spot. Fun Spot let us bring in 1,000 kids with special needs into the park for free and 1,000 caregivers. And we did it. Normally we do this all in one day. They've done this with us several years, and we normally do it all in one day. But this year we separated them out, 500 and 500. We did it in hours. They weren't as crowded. But I'm telling you, our families were so grateful. We had parents weeping, saying, thank you for giving us this experience. Like, thank you. Like, we haven't had any fun in our life. Thank you for bringing this to us, like doing this for us and just saying, show up and we could be here. And you're caring about us, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think as things open up and families can start to come out again, and I know our respite programs can start, I know families are grateful for that, but the need will always be there. And I just that thought of just remembering these families live in the state of pandemic, you know, and they're isolated and they can't come out to things. In some sense, you know, when all these churches went online, it was actually put families with disability on equal playing ground, because everybody was watching and it could be like everybody else. But now when church goes back, some churches aren't equipped to welcome families in. So these families will continue to watch online mm-hmm. while people go back, you know. So it's just remembering that this community is out there and what are some of their unique needs that we can help. And it's not so much even about establishing a program, but it's just looking one by one, look at a family and what can I do to help them? You know,
it sounds like when you say establish a program, that if a church is listening, a pastor is listening right now, that there are many programs that could quickly kind of be formed in churches that would meet some of these real practical needs.
Right. But sometimes programs can be daunting. Like when you say, well, if I open up a program, I'm going to have all these families show up that I don't know how to take care of, you know? So I'm always like, just start with one family. If you know mm-hmm. you've got one family with autism in your church, just start, sit down with them and ask them, what can we do to make this a welcoming environment for you? How can we include your child? What special accommodations do you need? And just take care of that child. And then, so take care of Joey. And then when Sally shows up and she's got Down syndrome, what are Sally's unique needs? How can we help? And as you begin to develop this, then you look at the individual and begin to grow it. But a respite program, you know, going back, really helps churches to bring the community together and kind of quickly train people, because it's a fun way to learn how to interact with somebody that maybe you haven't mm-hmm. been in connection with before. And it's a kind of a safe environment and fun, and you can fail. Like, you can chase a child for 3 hours and figure out how to communicate with them to make them stop doing that.
I'm familiar with a little bit of that concept right there, although it's not in this context. But yeah, I think every parent learns kind of like in real time. And that's what you're saying the volunteers are able to do. But what a service. It might be a tough, I mean, this kind of puts it in perspective. You know, you think about if you're working in a children's ministry on Sunday mornings and you're dealing with something, and if it were a special needs situation and you're dealing with it for 45 minutes, think about what that mom and dad are dealing with when it's 24/7, 365.
Right. And oftentimes our volunteers, when they have to come out early on a Saturday morning, I'll never forget our oldest daughter on one Saturday, I was waking her up because we were going to go to buddy break and we were going to serve, and it was early. And she said, I'm just really tired. And she laid back down, and within like 20 seconds, she popped up and she said, these parents have to live with us all the time. I can get up on a Saturday and I can do this, you know.
Yeah, so, I think that helps us put things in right perspective.
Right.
And I believe also it helps us with not getting comfortable in our own life to the point where we're not willing to serve another person.
Right, right.
And that is one of the greatest symbols of I believe, Christianity that we have is love and servitude. When we see those two things come together, wonderful things can happen.
Right. Love never fails, right?
Never fails. Thank you for coming in, and thank you for this incredible bit of news that you've brought to our listeners today about a very important topic, and I believe something that is much wider spread than what a lot of people might think. Especially when you bring in the stats that you did about autism, there's a lot of people dealing with a lot of special needs, and this is a great opportunity for individuals as well as churches, and we've already heard how even businesses can kind of come together like what FunSpot did and make a day that is like no other day. Give us your website.
Okay, our website is nathanielshope.org. Very simple. You can get lots of videos and lots of information there.
Well, tell your husband I said hello, and I look forward to having him in and talk about Regal Boats as well. But I'm just really thrilled to learn about this wonderful organization that the two of you founded, and thank you for serving all of these VIPs that are among us.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
It's really been wonderful to have you. My guest today, Marie Cook from Nathaniel's Hope. That's all of our time today. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.